The following program is pre-recorded.
From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for the good doc, the number to call is 800-462-7413. And along with your calls, we have some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Right. Artificial sweeteners, do they raise your blood sugar, even though they don't have calories? Some interesting data that came out that I think throws some light on why those artificial sweeteners have not decreased obesity in America. And tattoo ink, it's not regulated. What do scientists say? What's the problem? Do you have a tattoo, Tom?
No.
You were in the Navy, though. How did you get out of the Navy without getting a tattoo?
I always wanted one, and I never got one. I don't know.
Well, Tom, time has come. Time has come. You got a tattoo, Monica's name.
I could do that, couldn't I?
You actually could do that. You actually could do that.
What's our special recipe?
It is special, Tom. It's got rice. It's sticky. It's pork belly. It's sticky rice with pork belly, and it is delicious.
Yum, yum. 800-462-7413 is our number. We welcome our first caller, a listener in Poinette, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, I have a couple of questions about type 1 diabetes, and I was reading about Harvard doing some studies with the TB vaccine and that it had dramatically helped people with type 1 diabetes. A lot of them were taking almost no insulin and keeping decent blood sugars. I was wondering if Zorba has heard of any of that on that study.
You know, it's amazing what you can find on the net these days, you know? I mean, good news, bad news, you know, it's sunny outside, it's cloudy outside, you know, numbers are numbers, though, no matter what you see on the net. The answer is there's some research with BCG, which is a vaccine for tuberculosis. Doesn't really work very well. It works to help TB in developing countries and young children, but we don't give it because it's a vaccine that really has no – it's not really effective in reducing tuberculosis. We don't give it in this country at all. But the reality is that data is very, very controversial data. So there's no good data on the reduction of diabetes. What we do know with type 1 diabetes is that it appears for some people, maybe a lot of people, that it may be a viral infection. And all of a sudden, the body starts producing antibodies to insulin cells, the islets of Langerhans, insulin cells within the pancreas. And lo and behold, we get diabetes because it's really an immune problem, an immune disease. And that's sort of the theory right now. But how we actually are going to take care of that becomes another matter. So wish I had good news for you. Do you have type 1 diabetes?
Yes.
How long have you had it?
Like 32 years.
Wow, that's a long time. Are you using the continuous glucose monitoring system or what sort of insulin are you taking?
Nope. Actually, I don't have insurance, so I buy. Actually, that was something else I wanted to bring up too, because insulin being so high priced and all, there you can get non-prescription insulin at. Well, I don't know if I should say the name of the largest discount store in the country, but their pharmacy sells for like $25 a vial for regular insulin and for N. And so that's how I've been keeping my blood sugars under control for years now.
You know, that's amazing. I had no idea that you could get insulin, non-prescription. In other words, they make insulin available without a prescription. You can get it for $20 a vial. That is amazing. When did you start doing that?
Actually, my prescription ran out, and I went to the pharmacy, and I didn't have a doctor anymore, and the pharmacist told me I could get it, so I've been using it ever since. So it cost me $50 a month for insulin.
I got to tell you something. Thank you for sharing that with our listeners. That's really important to know. I had no idea. I write medical columns. I've got to do a column on that. I had no idea that you could buy insulin without a prescription. But in many ways, that makes a lot of sense, because if you need insulin, if you don't have it, you could die. And, you know, you could die before you get into a doctor's office. And if you don't have insurance, what are you going to do? And I take it as probably NPH insulin, which is the more long-acting insulin. Right.
Yep.
You can do a lot with regular insulin and NPH insulin. You can do a lot, and people can often get under control with that by just regulating. Well, thank you for sharing that.
You are welcome. I just wanted people to know that it was available.
Thank you, and thanks for sharing that, and thanks for educating me and Tom.
And we appreciate the call at 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, some artificial sweeteners can raise your blood sugar, I understand.
Yeah, kind of interesting. You know, artificial sweeteners, you know. First of all, artificial sweeteners have no calories, okay? They don't have any calories at all. But since we introduced artificial sweeteners, NutraSweet, aspartame, really being the landmark one that was introduced, oh, I don't know, 40 or 50 years ago. Saccharin is what started it, and then you had sweeteners that were taken off the market, made by Abbott. Now the name is sort of slipping my mind as to what it was, because they thought it might cause cancer, because it caused cancer in laboratory rats. Then the feds took saccharin off the market. Then people started yelling and screaming and said, I want my saccharin. And then you had aspartame, which is basically made up of amino acids. And lo and behold, it's in pretty much everything. So you've got aspartame, you've got NutraSweet, you've got stevia, you've got sucralose. But no one's losing any weight. I don't know if you've noticed, but people are gaining weight in our country.
Not more than before. You think we're fatter than we used to be?
Than in the 50s, than in the 60s, than in the 70s, than in the 80s, than in the 90s. And in the meanwhile, we're consuming lots of soft drinks with calories, but lots of soft drinks without calories. So the question has been all along is, drinking diet soda, and by the way, if you know, you probably haven't noticed, they know they have Diet Coke, but now they call it Coke Zero.
Okay.
I mean, it's a slightly different concoction, because nobody wants to, a lot of people do not want to be on a Diet Coke. They'd rather have Coke Zero, which basically has artificial sweetener in. But they looked at two artificial sweeteners, saccharin and sucralose, and they took people who were eating normally. They took soft drinks that had saccharin and sucralose, did not elevate their blood sugar unless they actually did something called the glucose tolerance test. Now, in a glucose tolerance test, you're eating lots of regular sugar, okay? They want to see how your body reacts, how much insulin you produce. And the people who are on saccharin and sucralose, which is saccharin and sucralose, which is another artificial sweetener, lo and behold, that affected how they metabolize blood sugar, glucose. In other words, the artificial sweeteners did not elevate blood sugar, but the artificial sweeteners amplified the body's blood sugar, how the blood sugar reacted to food that was coming in that contained sugar. In other words, it's not benign. In other words, it appeared to make a change in how you metabolize sugar and therefore food. And the theory is it has to do with the microbiome that are in your gut. So there's a bottom line here. What do you think the bottom line is?
I don't know. Tell me.
Well, that's exactly that. Thanks. The bottom line is artificial sweeteners may affect how you metabolize your food. That's the bottom line. And it may be that you're essentially consuming a drink that has no calories in it at all. So it itself is not elevating your blood sugar, but it may be that when you actually eat food or eat anything that's sweet, it's going to spike your blood sugar. And so it's not totally benign.
What's the last time you had a Coke?
Last time I had I don't remember when I had a Coke.
It's been a long
and, you know,
time.
I don't remember when I had a Diet Coke.
I don't drink
Coke
diet
drinks. No, but we don't drink that. But if you go into a store, a convenience store, you look at all the drinks that are on the shelves. They're caffeinated drinks, but they're more sweet drinks than caffeinated drinks. And the reality is there's a lot of diet stuff there that people drink and assume, hey, this is benign. It's not, there are no calories, which is true, but it may be increasing how you metabolize regular food in your body. And that's why we are continuing to get bigger and bigger and bigger.
800-462-7413 is our number. That's 800-462-7413. A voicemail now, Zorba, from Woodstock, Illinois.
My question is, I had COVID and I still can't taste and smell. I went to the ear, nose, and throat specialist. They put me on oral steroids and nasal steroids. It didn't work. I've tried everything on TikTok, smelling all those essential oils for months and months, and nothing's worked. And I was just wondering if the doctor had any ideas. It's very depressing. Thank you.
It is depressing. People have it say they have a tough time. First of all, a lot of people find that normal smells don't feel good to them at all. I had one guy who came in, he worked in the hospital, and he said, when people come in with roses, it smells like dank garbage. I mean, so it just changes you at all. The good news is that 99% of the people, somewhere in that 90% range, appear to get their sense of smell back within a year. Many of them take a year to get the back. So if it's been less than a year, it just may take more time. The bad news is that there is absolutely nothing known to actually reverse this. Giving steroids, we give it. We think it may work, but there's no good evidence that shows it does work. Those people may just be coincidentally getting better. Steroid nasal sprays may work. Again, there's no good evidence. But if this person were in my office, I would try both of those because they have a chance of working. And unfortunately, there is no magic trick that I know of or anyone else knows of. COVID is a mean, nasty virus.
Mm-hmm. 800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. And before the break now, Zorba, this seems like a good time to acknowledge a pretty important milestone here at Zorba Pastor on Your Health. You and I have been at this for quite some time.
Oh, my goodness.
And believe it or not, this year marks our 30th
Oh, my God.
Of doing the show.
30th year of doing the show. Way, let's have some applause. Wait a minute, Carl. Are you going to play applause? Yay, 30th year. Awesome. And you look exactly the same. So do I.
You both look the same.
You look exactly the same.
Well, thank you, I guess. I didn't look that good 30 years ago. Carl, our producer, Carl was digging through the archive room, and he unearthed a dusty box of old Zorba Pastor on Your Health cassette tapes. So he put together a few snippets from our very first show in January of 1992. So, Zorba, let's break out the 30-year-old single malt scotch and enjoy the sonic trip back to our very first show.
This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Hello again, I'm Tom Clark. Each week at this time, we'll be bringing you Dr. Zorba Pastor. He'll be here to answer your questions on the phone, your questions about health and medicine.
I have a question about the new skin patch that I've read about to help people stop smoking.
That would be an excellent alternative. The patches are coming out on the market. They should be available sometime this month. The cost for the patch will be about the same as the cost for a pack of cigarettes, so they won't be cheap because cigarettes aren't cheap. They're over $2 a pack.
I'm Tom Clark with Dr. Zorba Pastor. Dr. Pastor, what about lead poisoning and that wrapper around the wine?
Well, let's talk about lead from two sources, the wrapper and the goblet that you're drinking it from. If you happen to have a lead decanter at home that's filled with port or whiskey, I mean, I don't know anyone who does, but I've always seen it in the movies, that there's a tremendous amount of lead that leaches out, and you shouldn't be drinking anything out of that. Now, let's jump step to the wine wrapper.
Yeah.
When you pull that wrapper off, that foil wrapper happens to be lead. If you take it and give it to your child, they're going to get lead lead poisoning if they chew on it. And it turns out that there's lead dust that's left on the top of the wine bottle. And the recommendation now is to take the top of it and wipe it off with a cloth. Interestingly enough, the California wineries have jumped on the bandwagon right away and said they are going to phase out lead wrappers. And so there will not be lead wrappers on California wine, as far as I know it, after 1992 or 1993. They've decided to get rid of it. I think it's important to wipe the top of the wine bottle. I don't think you have to get rid of the expensive wine.
Before we take the break, what's this all about, Dr. Pastor, and why in the world would we be doing recipes in a program that deals with health and medicine?
When we're talking about good health, we can't talk about good health without exercise and without proper nutrition. So on every show, we're going to give a recipe from my tried and tested kitchen, a healthful recipe which will more or less be for fruit or vegetable or some other food that you may not have thought.
Okay.
This is useful.
That's coming up in just a minute, right here on the very first broadcast of Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Dr. Pastor, it's been fun. We look forward to next week, the same time.
You bet, Tom.
If you'd like a cassette copy of this last hour, we can sell you one.
First of all, you called me Dr. Pastor.
I was going to say, how long had did I
right.
go say
that's
with
right.
Dr. Pastor?
Yeah, where's the respect? No. You're not calling me Zorba. You're not calling me Dr. Pastor anymore.
Yeah, I've got to get back to Dr. Pastor. More of your calls are coming up. More of your emails as well. We'll be cooking up a very tasty pork belly recipe. All that coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange with Dr. Pastor. I'm Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. The number is 800-462-7413. Zorba, before we get back to the phones, sticky rice with pork belly.
Does that sound good to you? Do you like Asian food? What kind of food do you like?
Oh, you know me. Burgers and fries.
Burgers and fries. What's for dinner tonight?
I haven't had a burger and fries in, a decade.
That's right. That's right.
Let's do this one.
A decade? I bet you within the last 10 years you've had it. You can't get away. You've had a burger and fry within a decade.
Probably not. Sticky rice with pork belly.
Wait a minute. What about before COVID? You used to go to the Curve.
What?
All right, sticky rice with pork belly. Start out with 3/4 cup of shiitake mushrooms soaked in warm water. So these are the shiitake mushrooms you get at the Asian grocery store.
3/4 cup shiitake mushrooms soaked in warm water.
That's right, warm water. You're going to use 2 tablespoonfuls of oil.
2 big tea oil.
1/2 cup of peanuts, non-salted peanuts.
1/2 cup of peanuts.
1 cup of pork belly. Cut into 1/2-inch thick pieces.
1 cup pork belly cut into 1/2-inch thick pieces.
That's right. Where do you get your pork belly, Tom?
I don't have a pork belly. I'm a skinny guy.
By the way, I read about Charles Atlas the other day. Remember Charles Atlas
in
magazines?
Sure.
That's right. I read all about him. He considered himself the man's most perfect physique ever in life. That's how he sort of promoted himself. Anyway, Carl wouldn't know about these were advertisements in the back of magazines. He didn't have a pork belly. He had, a solid belly. This is back in the 50s. Sorry, I know that we're waxing to something, but we just talked about 30 years ago. We might might as well go back to when we were kids. God, what year? You were born a long time ago. Well, let's go back. One third cup fried shallots.
Third cup fried shallots.
2 tablespoonfuls of low-sodium soy sauce.
2 big tea, low-sodium soy sauce.
1 tablespoonful of oyster sauce.
1 big tea oyster sauce.
1.5 cups of short-grain sticky rice. It's also called sweet rice by some people, soaked in water overnight.
1.5 cup short-grain sticky rice, soaked in water overnight.
Okay, let's make the recipe, of course. It'll be a recipe that Monica might make this recipe. She might. I mean, well, I won't go into that because she probably won't. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Add the peanuts to the oil of a nonstick pan. Cook it over medium heat, stirring until golden brown, about 5 minutes. So these are non-roasted peanuts that you buy in an Asian grocery store. Set those aside. Then add the pork belly to the pan. If you've got a wok, that's the way to use it. Use the remaining cooking oil, stirring until golden brown. It's probably going to take about 5 or 10 minutes. Then add in the fried shallots, soy sauce, oyster sauce, and the shiitake mushrooms. Put in 2 cups of water. Put it in a rice cooker. Or bring it down to a boil and cook it for about 20 minutes until its rice is all cooked up. And then finally, stir in the oil-fried peanuts and serve it. And it is delicious.
You're not going to invite me over for this.
I'm not going to invite you over. But I'm going to invite over a lot of other people who like Asian food. Sticky rice with pork belly. And if you want a copy, don't send us a letter because we don't have a mailbox. But here we go. You can go to our website, that's zorbapastor.org. You can see pictures of Tom, pictures of me, stories of Tom, stories of me, old recipes of Tom, old recipes of me.
This has been 30 years. Are these 30-year-ago pictures, I hope?
God, we should put on pictures from 30 years ago. No, I think the pictures are newer than that.
Oh.
That's zorbapastor.org. Of course, you can find us through Facebook.
1-800-462-7413 is our number, 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, I'd like to give a little suggestion with regard to trolley horses. You have covered them a number of times over the years, and very recently have indicated quite a bit of empathy with those of us who suffer from it. Now, I am very old, approximately Tom's age, and
you had to throw that in, didn't you?
No. I mean, I think we're great. It's a great age.
You're right.
It's
you're
just
right.
Old.
I
yeah,
hope anyway, I hope I live to a greater age, too.
Yeah, I do, too.
Okay.
But I say that only because I have used this little, whatever you'd call it, folklore trick, whatever, for half of my life at least. So that means since I have trolley horses at least a half a dozen times a year, that this has worked for me hundreds of times. So this is the trick. You take your first 2 fingers, thumb and forefinger, and you pinch or press the area below your nostrils, immediately below your nostrils, and that's it. But the second part of the question, and I really would appreciate Zorba's comment here, is whether there might be anything neuroanatomically that could account for this. It has worked infallibly for me, and I am not suggestible, highly suggestible, and it's not a placebo effect. And I have extreme trolley horses when I get them.
Wow. How long does it, when you do that, how long does it take for the trolley horse to abate?
Well, you wouldn't believe it, but actually it's almost immediately.
Huh.
Not immediately, but I mean almost.
Huh.
I couldn't believe it. When I tried it, I had been through the mustard and, you know, and you had people suggest eating mustard and charcoal. But, you know, when you're having it's excruciating. That's not hyperbolic. And when you have that, you can't be opening a packet of mustard.
Did you make this up or did you read it? How did you find out about it?
Oh, no, I don't make up things like this. No. I read it. This is the public's a well-known secret that people in my field, I'm a clinical psychologist, people in my field read the advice columnists just to second-guess them. It's a, you know, kind of a little game we play. So sometime in my adulthood, after I was out of graduate school, et cetera, I started reading one of the advice columnists that was in the local paper. And doing this little game with, you know, other people occasionally and so forth. And at one time, she wasn't constantly giving advice of this sort. Somebody wrote to her and said that years before that, she had given a helpful hint for Charlie horses. Could she please repeat it? So she did in just a one-liner, and that's where I got it. And my thought was, oh, yeah, right. But it really worked. Yeah, really.
Well, I have no idea if there is anything neuroanatomical. But then again, we don't understand why acupuncture works for some people. I mean, it's a Chinese, you know, Chinese medicine, as you know. And it's a different way of looking physiologically at the body. So this may have some acupuncture points. But most importantly, you may be helping lots of people with this. And I think what we have to do is we have to take a picture. I'm going to take a picture. I don't know if I can convince Tom because he's an old guy. Whether or not he'll take a picture.
She's my age. Don't insult the callers.
That we were old a few weeks ago. You're always so nice and, you know, try to tell people, you know, old is only and blah, 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 and very nicely. And then somebody told you that you were in our age cohort. I mean, I won't mention the exact figure, but, and you said, oh, that is old.
But this
so
is good
by definition, by Zorba's definition, I am old. And so is Tom. We are right there in there.
Oh,
and one other thing, Zorba, I should also alert you that I'm a member of the Grammar Police, but of the Benevolent Order of Grammar Police. No, I say this because I want to tell you, I do not correct people's grammar, but I encourage them when they are using, you know, something that really is important to use correctly, or when somebody might be hurt by, you know, something that goes beyond, you know, editing their speech. And I just want to praise you because you use something correctly, and it's very important. This is serious, Zorba. It's very important for children who are exploring their gender. It's important to say affirming gender rather than confirming gender. And you did that, unless I misheard you. So I want to congratulate that because it's very important.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing. And thank you. We try to do good work. Tom and I try to give out good information that's worthwhile. That's what we do every week.
It really is what we do.
Thank you. Well, we really appreciate the call very much.
Thank you so much for that compliment. Thank you.
At 1-800-462-7413. I think she's aging a little better than I am.
Well, I don't know about that. You age pretty well. But I have a question. You know, the Grammar Police are usually behind the curtain. I don't remember the last time we interviewed anyone directly from the Grammar Police. It's been a long time. Now, sometimes we get the Punctuation Police, but rarely do the people in the Grammar Police show their face, their cards.
800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. 1-800-462-7413. And we have a voicemail now, Zorba, from Pontevedra, Florida.
Well, hello, Dr. Zorba and Tom. I really appreciate your show. I just want to know if there's anything over-the-counter that does promote prostate health. Thanks a lot. Bye.
There really is not anything. You know, there's lots of stuff on the counter. They say promotes prostate health, meaning that it decreases the amount of times you have to go to the washroom, you have to urinate, overactive bladder, all those. That's really what they're all for. So, you know, saw palmetto, lots and lots of research on saw palmetto to see whether it actually would do something. And the answer is, unfortunately, it does not. Now, getting on to that, most men are upset with prostate health because they have the feeling they have to go to the washroom all the time, or they don't empty their bladder. So I have some recommendations. One recommendation during the daytime is you empty your bladder not by the sensation, but by the clock, like 8 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 8 o'clock, so that your bladder is never full, so you do not soil yourself. You don't have to get to the washroom right away. The other recommendation is when you go out, you automatically go to the washroom when you go out of the house before you leave your home, because you don't know where the washroom is. And if you pass a washroom, go and use it. And that's kind of the way to do it. And then when you're on an airplane or somewhere else, you just limit the amount of fluid. So the behavioral way is to do it. But unfortunately, we don't have anything over the counter that can really shrink the prostate. Now, there are medications that you can use, tamsulosin, and then another drug that actually is an alpha blocker that can actually shrink the prostate in conjunction. But for those two drugs, you need to actually get them from a doctor.
Question for Zorba, 800-462-7413. Now, before the break, Zorba, we love hearing from our favorite backseat drivers, the grammar police. But actually, Zorba, this time we're going to hear from the squeaky clean division of the grammar police known as the soap police.
This week on the soap police, Tom reads Zorba an email from Judy, a seasoned soap baker in Spokane, Washington.
Okay, Zorba, Judy in Spokane writes, Dr. Zorba, on a recent show, you advised a caller to take fewer showers and to switch to Dove soap for dry skin. You've given this advice regarding Dove several times, and it bugs me. As a soap maker, I would like you to consider recommending homemade soap rather than any commercially made soap or detergent bar, and here's why. Glycerin is naturally occurring in homemade soap. It's a byproduct of the soap-making process. Remember the Antonio Banderas Zorro movie? Spoiler alert, the bad guys were making soap to extract the glycerin so they could make explosives. This is still done today. Glycerin is used to make nitroglycerin. So, then instead of a lot of naturally occurring glycerin in the homemade soap, the manufacturers make a big deal about added glycerin and only use a fraction of what would be in a regular bar of homemade soap. The public is being duped. When I first started making soap 25 years ago, I gave my sister some, and her teenage son used it, and he reported to me that his eczema had cleared up. Also, Zorba, the brand you recommended is technically not a soap. You can look it up. It's called Beauty Bar because it has no soap in it, only ingredients of the chemical variety. Thanks for reading this. I love your show. Homemade soap is readily available online and at many markets and farmers markets and craft shows. Once you get a supplier, you will never go back.
Well, this is clearly something that educates me. So first of all, I've never looked at Dove and seen it as a beauty bar. I mean, I wouldn't say go buy a Dove beauty bar. So I can sort of consider it soap. It's considered to be something that doesn't dry out your skin. But she brings up an important point in that a lot of soap has detergents in it. The big detergent soaps, Lifebuoy, Zest, those are ones that I know tend to dry out the skin even more. But you know what? I don't promote glycerin homemade soap like it should be. And the reality is you can get it all over the place. You can get it in the web, obviously, and you can get it at markets all over. And I think she brings up an important point. Find a soap that doesn't dry out your skin. Obviously, it's a glycerin soap used to make nitroglycerin, which I never thought about that, but a glycerin soap that may be useful, and also you may be supporting a local purveyor, which is better for the local economy. Thank you for pointing it out.
Mm-hmm. Have you worked yourself in a lather? Have you worked yourself up in a lather about something Zorba said? Join the ever-growing grammar police and send your grievances along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls coming up, more of your emails, another interesting topic to talk about. All that coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 is our number. 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, tattoo ink is under-regulated, scientists say.
Yeah, it's really not regulated for the most part at all. But let's talk about tattoos. Now, when you were a kid, who had tattoos?
Well, some people had
tattoos.
Some
people. Usually if they got it when they were mostly men, they got it often in the military. They got in the Navy. A lot of guys in the Navy had, you were in the Navy, a lot of guys had tattoos.
I always wanted to get one, and I never did.
Yeah, how come?
I don't know.
Yeah, you don't have anything on your arm that says, like, Monica, my love forever? You know, or the stars and stripes. But now, when I went as a medical school, if you saw somebody with a tattoo, you immediately, one of the things you did in their workup in the hospital was check them for syphilis. And the reason was, that was a common way that syphilis was actually spread because a lot of tattoo needles were not sterilized. Well, a lot of tattoos, tattoos that are often done, certainly in tattoo parlors, they use fresh needles. Needles used to be very expensive 50 years ago. Now they're not. And so the connection with syphilis really is not there like it used to be. But as you know, when you see people have lots of tattoos these days.
Yeah.
The issue is the ink is not regulated. It's under-regulated. In other words,
often is there a problem of ink in a tattoo?
Well, that's a real question. And the real question is whether or not any of the things within the ink have carcinogenic products. In other words, the FDA does not have – it's a cosmetic product. The FDA does not really have any, if you will, ability to actually regulate tattoos. Lots of people get tattoos not just at, quote, regular tattoo parlors, but often other people that are doing. There are not dye shops that specifically make this, and so it's a kind of a question. And one of the things, the rule of thumb generally is that particles that are very, very small, something called 100 nanometers from the start. In other words, if they're really small particles, they can be something for concern for human health because it can mean that the particles can get into the bloodstream and go elsewhere. And in this particular study, they found that when they looked at 16 inks, different inks, that many of them had particles that were actually this small. And so if you're going to get a tattoo, the real problem is I don't have any suggestion of knowing whether or not the ink is safe or not. That's a real question.
Well, have you ever treated someone with a ink tattoo.
Not at all. Not at all. And I don't see any infections with it.
Isn't that often that there's a problem?
Well, we don't really know. We don't know if it produces any longstanding problems. But I think if you're going to get a tattoo, the answer is to get it from a reliable tattoo artist. Make sure that their needles are sterilized. I'm sure that they are. And they use fresh ink, because fresh ink is going to be much better than ink that has been used that is not fresh.
I'll remember that. 800-462-7.
Maybe you will have it before you die. Maybe you'll have Monica on your your right arm.
Good idea.
Love forever.
Good idea. 800-462-7.
I wonder what she would say if you came home from the show and said, "Guess what, honey? Look what I got on my shoulder."
Don't you think she'd say, "Oh, thank you. I love you so much for doing that."
I know Monica quite well. I don't think she'd actually say that. She might say something else.
Let's get back to the phones. 800-462-7413. An Oklahoma City, Oklahoma caller with us now. Hi.
Good day, Dr. Zorba, and greetings, Tom. I am calling to ask a question, I guess clarification, about naproxen and Aleve. I am a longtime listener, first-time caller, and I've been listening to Dr. Zorba, and I've heard you mention numerous times telling people to take naproxen for pain instead of ibuprofen or whatever. But recently, a lady called about back pain, and then a gentleman called about his fingers, and you told them to take Aleve. And I was just wondering the reason for not taking naproxen for their symptoms, because of you, I take naproxen now. And also, I don't have a tattoo because I don't like needles or paint. So, just want to put that out there. I am not a tattoo person.
No, Aleve is the name brand of over-the-counter naproxen. It is. That is the active ingredient. And I often tell people to take Aleve because they don't need a prescription. Double the dose in the bottle. Take two tablets twice a day. I like it better than ibuprofen because it's a 12-hour drug, and ibuprofen is an 8-hour drug, even though ibuprofen is more common. And to get the same dosage, you have to take 4 ibuprofen, which are 800 milligrams, to get the same anti-inflammatory effect as with 2 Aleve tablets. So that's why I'm kind of akin to that. But you've been using naproxen for years. Has it worked for you?
Yes, it has. I had hip surgery in 2019. Mm-hmm. Not a hip replacement, just a hip surgery. And it helped a little bit, but I still wake up in the morning with pain and I go to bed with pain. But I heard you recommend someone to start taking naproxen for it. And so I take 2 in the morning, and I'm a PE teacher. Mm-hmm. So I'm on my feet and it gets me through the day.
Excellent.
And
then
I mean, it really made a huge difference in my life.
Excellent. So I appreciate
that.
So I've got a question for you. You're a PE teacher. What are kids doing these days? Are they, you know, you've got a lot of issues with kids not moving, looking at their cell phones, not actually moving. What sort of success have you had with your work?
Well, yes, you are right. They are not doing enough. And it's really sad because It's the screen time. I mean, mm-hmm. they're wanting just to be on their laptops or their devices, going outside to play. You know, growing up, we were outside until we got called to come home. And that just doesn't happen anymore. And it's really sad. Either they're doing organized sports mm-hmm. or they're not doing anything at all. And it's really sad. It's very sad.
So those are the two extremes that are there. It's organized sports or it's nothing. So it's not like when I was a kid or you were a kid, and certainly when Tom was a kid, when you would go outside and do something. I mean, you'd find your friends and you'd hang out and go from one place to another and move your body.
Right. Or riding a bike. I mean, you know, riding a skateboard, playing basketball outside, jumping rope.
Right.
Just going outside to play in general. They're not doing it. And it's really sad because being able to throw a ball, jumping rope, or throwing a Frisbee, we're having to teach fifth graders how to throw a Frisbee because they are not doing it.
You have to teach fifth graders how to throw a Frisbee.
Yes, sir. Or how to hula hoop. You know, I mean, it's really sad. It's a very sad state that we're in because these kids are not going outside. They're just staying indoors, doing their thing. And it's not, and here's the other thing too, and this is my personal opinion. Parents are not playing with their kids either. They're not going outside and playing ball with them or mm-hmm. going for mm-hmm. fun. Now some are. I'm not making a blanket statement. I want to clarify that right there. It's easier to tell your child to get on their phone than to go outside and engage with them.
I think you hit it right on the head. Mm-hmm.
It's easier to do that than to go outside and throw a Frisbee mm-hmm. or to go outside and play four square mm-hmm. with your kids.
Mm-hmm.
Just 30 minutes a day playing with your kid, engaging with them outside in the sunshine, in the fresh air, doing something rather than being inside on the laptop. And these kids would love it. You know, kids would love if their parents or just anybody would go outside and play with them. Just get it going. But it's just going to take somebody to get it going. And we try to do that here. We try to get the kids, teaching them recess games, games that they can play at home, out with their friends, do stuff outside, move, just move. But it's just easier to sit down and turn on the phone or the laptop and play a video game.
But, you know, you bring up a good point that the parents are not mentoring the kids by engaging with the kids because they're sitting down and looking at the phone and their laptop, too.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, there's conversations. Conversations are not taking place. I did some substituting in a high school. Trying to get those kids to talk to me was like pulling teeth. Huh. Just getting them to engage mm-hmm. and have a conversation. They don't know how to do it because mm-hmm. they're on their devices the mm-hmm. entire time. Mm-hmm. They don't even know the kid sitting next to them. They don't even know the kid's name because they don't talk. You know, when these kids came back to school, they were wearing masks. And so they had a mask on. So hearing them was hard. And plus, it shielded them. Well, then we come back to school later, and, okay, you don't have to wear a mask. Well, some of the kids took the mask off. Some of the kids kept them on. Well, the kids kept them on. That was like their turtle shell. They could withdraw inside of that. Mm-hmm. And then we give them laptops to have to do their schoolwork on. Mm-hmm. So there's no engaging. There's no talking to your neighbor. There's no communication. And the teachers are not happy about it. I mean, granted, the classrooms are quiet. That's nice. But the personal skill, the social skills of interacting, of having a conversation, of knowing how to talk to an adult when an adult speaks to you, we're losing it. It's a losing battle. It's very, very sad.
Well, you keep up the good work that you're doing because it's one child at a time, one person at a time that does make a difference in an individual's life. So I want to congratulate you, and you bring up some really, really good points that I know a lot of our listeners agree with and are very interested to hear from someone like you who's right in the trenches doing good things.
Well, thank you, Dr. Zorba, and you keep doing it too. You and Tom, I enjoy listening to you.
Well,
and Carl does a great job too.
Thank you. Yes, he does.
And Brad.
That's right. Yeah, there we go. Thanks a lot. Thanks for your call.
We appreciate it. 800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. Okay, Zorba, let's crack open the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and take a listener email. The following question came to us from Pat in Madison, Wisconsin, who writes, Dr. Zorba, I'm 80 years old and I have skin that bruises and tears easily. My question is, would taking estrogen help this or will that increase my risk of breast cancer?
Well, estrogen, when you take it, increases your risk of uterine cancer and maybe slightly increases the risk of breast cancer. It turns out when you look back at the breast cancer data, the increased risk is not as high as we initially thought. Nonetheless, it's not going to make a difference once you're 80 years old. So the answer is you've got to be careful with your skin. Got to use an emollient cream on your skin to try to keep it from bruising as much. And I have no magic bullet for this.
Do you have a healthy living question for the good doc? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413 is our number, 1-800-462-7413. Now, let's hear a voicemail from a listener in Chicago.
The question is, what does it mean to have high platelet count? Thank you.
Well, it may not mean anything. I mean, in some cases, it can actually mean you've got an abnormality, have to see a hematologist, and there are things that can be done because you can have a disease where your platelets are too high. You can have a clotting disorder that can be serious. However, a high count that is still not too far out of range is simply a variation of normal. See, one of the things we do is we have a bell-shaped curve, and when we do the bell-shaped curve, 95% of the people who are normal fit within that bell-shaped curve, but 5% 90% of the people who are outside of that curve are still normal. So a higher count of platelets may mean something or may not need something, and that's something that you really need an evaluation of if it's super high, such as greater than 1 million.
Before we head out today, Zorba, we love when our listeners chime in to lend their tips or expertise to the show. The first listener tip came from Jacksonville, Florida.
A lady complained about back pain, and I'm 80 years old, but I learned some time ago that one of the best things for back pain is to do what's the old-fashioned deadlift. And I do those now. I'm up to about 170 pounds lifting, and I'm having no problem at all with my back. So I just wanted to pass that along to your listeners in general, not necessarily to the young lady who was calling. Thank you.
That may be a good thing to do.
Good for him. Huh?
Good for him. May not be good for everyone, but I think it's a great tip. Got another one?
Another listener tip from a listener in Mineral Point, Wisconsin.
I just heard the segment about scallops. I am also allergic to mollusks, not shellfish, not lobster, not anything like that, but mollusks. And actually in Europe, they are considered a different allergen other than the shellfish. I just thought I'd let you know that. Thank you much.
Right. They're all very individual things. Like I said, our good friend is allergic to scallops, but she can eat shrimp and other things. And this person is allergic to mollusks. So you know, if you're allergic to one type of shellfish, doesn't mean you can't eat other types of shellfish. But you got to be careful when you try those other types.
And finally, Zorba, here's a listener from Wakefield, Michigan.
Thank you so much for all that you do. A wonderful station. It's very educational and can't thank you enough from the bottom of my heart. Been listening to you for years. Always enjoyed your input. Thank you so much. Onward and upward.
Well, thank you so much. How nice. It's always nice to hear from listeners, short-term listeners, long-term listeners. It really goes to the heart and makes our work here worthwhile.
Do you have a helpful tip for the show? Just post it on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to stream our show online anytime, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org. Of course, you can find us through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime.
Anytime.
And leave us your question.
Your question.
At 1-800-
1-800-462-7413.
Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio.
With Tom Clark.
It's not intended as a medical diagnosis.
Not at all.
So please do check with your doc.
Always.
Our executive producer is Carl Christian.
That's right, Carl.
Here we go.
Our technical
director is Brad Colbert.
That's right. There's
our
Brad.
Theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran.
That's right.
For
Written
Zorba
years
Pastor,
ago.
I'm Tom Clark.
That's Tom Clark.
Asking you to join us
on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
That is, if we have a 31st year.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.